and I am a grateful, recovering alcoholic. Good morning. I like to say that I was born at an early age in a good Christian home, but I have heard so many AA speakers say that I am no longer convinced that's the place to raise children. At any rate, I was born at a very early age into a good Christian home. And it was a Catholic home, and we didn't think it was wrong to take a social drink. Make no mistake about it, we Catholics think, with the Baptists and some of the Methodists, that it's wrong to get drunk. But we did not believe that it was a moral wrong to drink in moderation. And so looking back over my childhood, I would have to say that if anybody was given an education in how to drink like a gentleman, how to handle the booze, it would be me. Our home was filled with tender, loving care. That's true. The God that was presented to me was a loving God. He was presented to me through loving relatives and parents and brothers and sisters. That's true. I never feared God. I lost him, I'll tell you that. In 1938, my mother felt that I needed some more men in my education, and so she sent me, as I say, she sold me up the river to the tender mercies of the Benedictine monks at Cullman, and I never got away. But things were lovely there, too. This was a German community, and every housewife with the name knew how to squeeze the grape and make that German-type grape juice. Only they made it out of strawberries. And I got news for you all. If you haven't tasted Cullman County strawberry wine, then you just got to wait till you get to paradise. I feel for you. I don't want you to go try it. But again, beautiful situation. Classmates in somebody's home, a mother and father have a piece of cake and a glass of wine. By 1941, I had fallen in love with the monks of St. Bernard. And I was through 2 years of college, and I decided if they'd have me, I'd like to become a monk of St. Bernard. And they voted me in for a year's trial. And to my amazement, although I had been in St. Bernard 4 years by that time, I only then discovered that the monks also knew how to squeeze that grape and make that German-type grape juice. Not to be outdone by the housewives of Cullman County. Yes, sir. Now, I wouldn't want you to get the idea that there's 60 drunk monks in Cullman, Alabama. There's not. Most of them are lovely, normal people. Again, it wasn't an everyday affair, but it was out in the open. It was the acceptable thing. On the great feast days for an hour in the afternoon, in little gemütlichkeit, homemade wine, homemade beer, pink lemonade for the pansies, you know, and cheese and crackers. And oh, I loved it. I tell you, it was just didn't come often enough for me. I just enjoyed. Now, it seems to me that right at that time, and I'm about 19 years old, the alcoholic situation is beginning to make itself apparent, because years later, when I'm trying to get put back together again, and an AA person who was a counselor said to me, "Father Hillary, how much did you drink?" I said, "Huh?" By this time, I'm getting a little bit honest. He says, "How much did you drink?" I said, "Well," and I heard some other speakers say it, and I identified right away. I said, "Well, I just have to admit that I always drank as much as there was, as long as there was anything to drink, as often as there was anything to drink. I never knew, and this is the truth, I never had too much trouble with the morning drink because I never had anything left. Or if I did, I couldn't find it. I always thought when you took the cork out the bottle or unscrewed the cap, you were supposed to throw it away because you were not going to have any use for that anymore." And, of course, that's not the way social drinking is done, but be that as it may. At 19 years old, we're having a Christmas party. This is my first year in the monastery. I got to tell you this. This one is the same kind of thing, except that singing and skits, strictly from Squaresville. But we didn't know any difference. We thought it was just loads of fun. And it was. And we still do it. And I still love it. But this was going to go a couple of days before Christmas, and maybe from 8 till 11 at night. And we said our prayers, and we're over there, and I'm there. First shot's fired, having a great time. Everything went well. And the next morning, we got up at 4 o'clock in those years, went to prayers at 4:15, and I was up and went to my prayers, did everything. But along in the morning, the old man said, oh, says, say, that's funny. Something happened last night. Surely that party didn't end till 11 o'clock. Yet you know what? This is me talking to myself. I don't remember blessed thing after 9:30. That's when Thorm got up and did the night before Christmas. Must have been between 9 and 9:30. Don't remember a thing. Wonder what happened. We're in there. If any of you are my persuasion, and some of y'all put your hands up, then you know what happened. I began to slip around to try to find out what did happen. And I found out nothing happened. That to all intents and purposes and appearances, I was as normal as I ever was. I stayed till the end of the party, helped clean up the dishes, carried the things back to the kitchen, helped the old fathers to the chapel in their room, went to bed. Nothing happened. Well, I don't know what alcoholism is. I know they say it is a disease. I believe that. And I know that they say, the theory is that it's a mental obsession tied up with a physical compulsion to drink. I know my definition of an alcoholic is somebody who drinks and gets in trouble because he drinks, and drinks some more and gets in trouble because he drinks, and drinks some more and gets in trouble because he drinks, and drinks some more and gets in trouble because he drinks. Now, you can get in trouble for other things, but that's the difference between, in my book, an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic. This one gets in trouble because he drinks. Well, I won't talk about that. I'm convinced today that whatever it is, I got it. And I had it from the word go. It's just a question of developing it to its full blossom. I mean, I don't think it's normal for that at that age to have experienced what I experienced without going to somebody and saying, hey, you know what happened to me last night? Let me tell you. But no, I don't know why I won't talk about that, but I don't. In my own mind, I say, well, now that's funny. I wonder what caused that. And I made the astounding conclusion that it was the cheese. You know, I can't eat cheese to this day. I often wonder if somebody like any one of you could have come to me and say, hey, kid, what you've just described is a blackout. And for many people, that's a certain sign that you've got it. And that you're just one of the people who will never be able to handle alcohol. I sometimes wonder if that had been done for me before my will was so badly damaged and my brain so blasted, whether I could have been spared the agonies that would come. I don't know. And again, see, I used to worry about that early in the AA business. And Judy would say, oh, hell, follow the Hillary. It don't make no difference how the jackass got in the ditch. Just get him out. I couldn't worry about it. We were sent to Kansas, and the Kansas monks, they all belong to WCTU. They don't drink. You want to bet? That's where I get introduced to hidden drinking, in that monastery. Oh, Lord, you know, here I am. I hope I'm not giving you all the wrong impression. People don't join monasteries to become drunks. They join monasteries as some kind of special Christian witness. That's what it's all about. But this kid, oh, dear Lord. Out in Kansas, they drink, but it's hidden. It's not the acceptable thing. I never could classify myself as a bar drinker. If I were to classify myself, it'd be as a chicken house drinker. And that's true. Everybody's got a chicken house in Alabama. You go out to see about the chickens. Come back in. Well, my drinking progressed in Kansas whenever it was available, as much as available. I was right there. Had a great time. Came back to Alabama for 4 years of theology, and guess what? We got a new abbot, and he done closed down the winery and the brewery. And the monks of Alabama are now dry. They don't drink anymore. Want a bet? You know, national prohibition has been proved to be a flop. There's still some people who don't know that. But it's hidden drinking now. And that's not a good pattern. 4 years of theology and 47, I'm called to orders. And I got news for you. If the Archbishop Tulin in 1947 had any idea that Father Hilary was an alcoholic when he called him to orders, he would not have ordained him. The Catholic Church has got enough trouble without ordaining drunk monks. But, you know, I guess I've got some control then. I don't know. I say I don't have any trouble. I'm teaching in the prep school in those years, associate principal. I say I don't get any trouble because of drinking, but that's not exactly true in my book. I'm developing these frightful personality clashes with the boss. Now, you can have personality clashes without being an alcoholic. But in my case, I do believe that alcohol was right there in the picture. And that if it hadn't been for alcohol, I could have resolved those clashes. I didn't. And I get a geographical cure removal before I know what it is. I get sent to the southeastern mountains of Kentucky, where Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee come together. What President Johnson declared a disaster area 15 years ago, I knew it was a disaster in 51. Lord have mercy. Nearest priest to me was two mountains away, 30 miles in that direction. Three mountains that way, 40 miles. Dry camp. First morning there, our priest I'm succeeding says, we go over to Aunt Sally Coon's for breakfast. Says, Aunt Sally Coon is not a member of the church, but Uncle Albert Coon is. And that little house next door belongs to you, but I got an arrangement. They feed me whenever I'm here because you were riding the circuits. Dear Lord in heaven. And they take care of the house and the church and take care of your meals when you're home. You can do what you want. Well, we go over to Aunt Sally Coon's for breakfast. Aunt Sally looks like nothing so much as Mammy Yoakum, and I'm telling you the truth. And she's a member of the Lottie Moon cycle. And she's got this older priest broken in, and she's not a bit happy with this new one coming. Anyhow, we sit down at the breakfast table in the kitchen. There's Uncle Albert, lovely man in his 60s, he's Catholic. And down here's Uncle Albert's son. He's about 35, 36, a state trooper. All he's got on past shorts. Kid over here, 19, that's all he's got on. One over here, 16, and me and the other priest. Conversation's a little difficult, but sitting there in front of me is a nice glass tumbler full of water. Beads on it, looks good. September, hot weather, I take it up. Three great big swallows, but you all have seen the atomic bomb blasts. My eyeballs turned around. I couldn't catch my breath. My ears went in and out. I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't see. I didn't say anything. Uncle Albert had one. The other priest had one. And the trooper had one. The two kids saved me. Well, after that breakfast, we stepped in high over the weeds going back to the rectory. And I said to the priest, what in God's holy name was in those glasses? He says, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He says, anytime you can get it. Can't tell you everything. You haven't got time. But I was there 3.5 years, and I'm telling you, I came to love the mountains of Kentucky, and I was an expert on moonshine. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you because it would disturb some of you weaker people. My career in drinking blossomed, and it was there that I first met AA. The priest I was replacing said to me, "Do you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous?" I said, "No, I don't know anything about it." He said, "Well, there's a small group that's just been started here in our town. I've been instrumental working with them." And he said, "None of the members of your congregation are any, but some of the spouses are, and maybe you'd like to work with them." And that's not, he's not saying anything bad. I said, "Yes, sure, I will." So I went. About 8 men, beautiful people. They gave me the big book to read. They gave me the Who Me. They gave me the 13 questions. They gave me a clergyman who looks at Alcoholics Anonymous. I read the whole thing, everything. Said, "Lovely program for my brother Tom." They built up my resentments before I knew what a resentment was. They wouldn't let me go to the closed meetings. So I went to all the open meetings. They wouldn't let me go to the closed meetings. I'm convinced today that if it's true, and I think it is to some extent, that you can't fool one alcoholic about another one, that the topic of those closed meetings in Bobbleville, Kentucky in the 50s were, what are we going to do with that young priest at the end of Pine Street who walks like a duck, who smells like a duck, who quacks like a duck, and who doesn't know he's a duck? I got to hurt. The first time I ever got invited to talk to a convention was over in Mississippi some years ago. And the way I got there was as follows. I was sitting at the desk one morning. I opened up a letter, and it was from my sponsor, Tom P., the district attorney in the next county. It's a copy of a letter that he sent to some man named Woody in Jackson, Mississippi. And it reads something like this. "Dear Woody, Father Hillary will be happy to speak at the Mississippi State Convention of AA on such and such a date. He'll be happy to speak at any meeting because we'll be there from the early bird meeting to the last shot is fired on Sunday. Sincerely yours, Tom P." I read that letter. I said, "Now they've torn the sheet. I cannot go over there to Jackson, Mississippi and stand up in Bishop Giroux's backyard and say, my name is Father Hillary and I am an alcoholic. Because, you see, Mississippi also figures in my story. I cannot do it. I just can't do it. I have been taught in AA that I had to have an honest desire to be stay sober, that I would go to any length. And I said, I cannot go. Then the mind says, you can't go to Mississippi. No. See, who was it in his pride and arrogance as a friend of AA went to a tri-state convention in Kentucky in 1953 and told all the alcoholics how to do it as a friend of AA? I used to have a hang-up about friends of AA. I've gotten over that. I know we need all the friends we can get, and I'm in favor of them, but I'm not a friend of AA. I belong. And the thought came to me, says, you can't go over to Mississippi, but, you know, it says something about making amends wherever you can. And looking back, this is one of the things, too, that I really get the hot flushes over when I think about that tri-state convention in Kentucky and me standing up there talking, arrogant, proud, oh, dear God in heaven. I said, maybe go to Mississippi and make some amends. Won't be the same people, the same breed of people. And I did. And I was happy I did. I got out of Kentucky, I say,
I didn't
get any trouble about drinking, but I drank, and man, it progressed. In Kentucky, it got to where I had to have it. I didn't have to drink it every day, but I didn't feel secure if it wasn't where I could see it. At least open up the closet and see it was dry up. Any of y'all feel like that? So I got back to Alabama, and I was dean of the college, and opportunities for drinking whenever they were there, I was there. I don't know whether my capacity is getting better or worse right then. I'm not sure. I really think it's doing both. But after how many years at home, I guess about five, this business is really getting so that the boss man is aware that I've got a drinking problem. I fool myself. I say, as long as I can be in the office at 8 o'clock in the morning, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, that I'm not drinking too much. I was in the office every time at 8 o'clock in the morning. I was bushy-tailed. I wasn't so bright-eyed many mornings. And many mornings I'd have been better off if I hadn't been in the office. But you see, you all have helped me to develop the sweet personality I've got now. I was not always this way. The boss man wasn't about to talk to me about whether I was drinking too much or not. Man, if he had just opened his mouth the smallest way, he'd have got it 1-2 in the kisser so quick it amazed. I mean, I knew what so-and-so was doing, and why didn't he do something about that? Don't talk to me about my problem. Go get that one and do something about that. Then come back to me. And so he doesn't. I get another geographical cure removal. That's what I get. This time I get sent to the Delta of the Mississippi. Now, if y'all think the Delta of the Mississippi is down in southwest Louisiana, you're mistaken. The Delta of the Mississippi begins in the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, and it proceeds downriver 40 miles on the Mississippi side, 20 miles on the Arkansas side, and you come to Yazoo City. And I tell you, those people down there in the Delta, they don't know the Civil War was lost. They don't even know it was fought. They couldn't care less. The Mississippi was dry, dry as bone. Lord have mercy on my poor soul. I thought I had come surely upon heaven. All I had to do was pick up the telephone and say, Mamie. She said, be right there, Father. One of my priest friends says, Father Hillary, when you tell him that, be sure to tell him Mamie's the bootlegger. Oh, Lord. I'd have to go get it. Lady would bring it. Put the full ones in, take the empty ones out, and send me a bill at the end of the month with a 20% reduction because I'm such a good customer. Oh, Lord, have mercy on my folks. So, you know, I've read, and they say, an alcoholic comes apart spiritually, mentally, and then physically. You put him back together again in reverse order. You can get him back together physically in comparatively short time, but it takes a much longer time to put him together mentally and a much, much longer time to get him together spiritually. But it was in Mississippi that I began to come apart spiritually and a little bit mentally. I never did come completely apart physically, but you know, that's the experience of many of us, I think. You wives, you Al-Anon people, you know, he's finally falling out in the bed, and you say, thank God, we're going to have a quiet night. And in an hour, he's up and running again. God have mercy on my poor soul. Anyhow, I fooled myself. I said, you know, I can control this. I can quit anytime I want to. And then that little still voice says, well, why don't you try? I said, I'm going to. Lent's coming. I'm going to make a big job in session. I'm not going to take a drink all during Lent. 6 weeks. And I don't. But you know what I do? the first time somebody sends me a press, and the parish knew by that time, if you really wanted to see the pastor's heart jump for joy and face light up with glee, give him a fifth of whiskey. Any kind, doesn't make a difference. Cheap, expensive, doesn't make a difference. So the first one somebody brings me, I put it up on the shelf, so that's for Easter Sunday. And then Easter Monday, and then third and Easter Tuesday, and Easter Wednesday, Easter Thursday, Easter Friday, and I get 40 bottles all lined up. And come Easter, I start. You see, I've got control. I never made it through the 40, I'll tell you that. But, oh Lord, have mercy. The blackouts are beginning to come again. And people are beginning to say something. My friends in the clergy go to a 40 hours devotion and, you know, I got a little chill. Somebody speaking mentioned about losing the cars. Normal people don't lose automobiles. They cost too much money. You can lose the keys, but you don't lose the car. I did. All the time. Then you have to lie to the garage. What garage? I don't know what garage. Oh, dear God.
Yourself in this position. I'm coming. What are you going to do? Suppose you were the steward in a Methodist church, or the deacon in a Baptist church, the elder in a Presbyterian church. Suppose you're on the parish council and you discover that the pastor is a drunk. You gonna tell him? Especially in the Catholic Church where the priest still signs the checks. You gonna tell him? Well, you're looking at a cat that got bailed. Three of the noblest men that I ever knew came to me in Mississippi and confronted me with the problem. Said, Father Hitler, we love you very much. We think you're an excellent pastor. Done great things for the church here, but we can't have going on what's been going on. You cannot deny that at the wedding reception 10 days ago, you were drunk. And they had a few other instances. I said, we're not going to the bishop over this because we know, watch this, that we know with the grace of God, a little willpower, and some prayers, you can get over this. And I believed him. That's the tragic thing. I believed him. And what they should have done is gone right straight to the bishop. You can get over this. And I believed him. That's the tragic thing. I believed him. And what they should have done is gone right straight to the bishop in Jackson and say, Bishop, you better come up to Shaw. Because you've got a drunk monk up there. And it's not going to get any better. It's going to get worse until somebody intervenes. Until somehow or another you break that vicious cycle of drinking and getting in trouble because you're drinking and drinking some more and getting in trouble because you're drinking. But I believe them. And then we have a new boss at Coleman. And I get a little notice that he's on his way to Dallas for a meeting and he's going to stop in Mississippi overnight. It's not what I've done, it's what has he found out that I have done. Lord have mercy. He comes with his aide-de-camp, and we have an Italian supper. We have anti-pasta. We have anti-pasta. We have pasta. We have 4 kinds of meat, 6 kinds of vegetables, 3 kinds of pie, and 2 kinds of cake. We have drinks before dinner, and we have 3 kinds of wine with dinner, and we have drinks after dinner, and I don't touch a thing. Next morning, he says, Mass, he's getting ready to go, and I catch his aide-de-camp. I said, hey, what does the boss want here? He said, didn't he speak to you last night? I said, not, just would we were all together. He didn't say anything, no. Well, he said, I'm surprised. He said, the board of trustees of the college has nominated you as the president of the college. And the boss man is chairman of the board and chancellor of the college said before he acted on the recommendation, he thought he'd like to interview you himself. He said he told me this morning that he was well satisfied and he was going to accept the recommendation of the board. You know, I never had any trouble with the second step. When they told me that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, I got no patience. I know I do have patience, but the new people who come in say, insane, me? I tell them I was so happy to find it out, I couldn't see straight. I had to be nuts, and I was delighted to find out that I was crazy. Imagine with what I told you, yes, I do get the bid to be president of the college. In my arrogance, my pride, I'd say, that'll show these people whether or not I got a drunk pastor. You don't think they'll be invited a pastor to be president of the college? That'll show them. And I accepted. Certainly I'll be president of the college. And they gave me a grand and glorious send-off in Mississippi. I know now they were saying, thank God he's gone. I must say that I've been able to make amends in Mississippi, and today I can show my face. Really, I'm grateful for that. The three men who came to me, as they should have done, one has gone to glory, but before he did, and the other two, all three of them, are my friends, thank God. I deeply appreciate that. I went over to Coleman as president of the college, convinced in my arrogance. Oh, I did say, now, Hillary, you know, maybe you got a little problem with drinking, so let's not drink so much. And then I decided I wouldn't drink anything but scotch. I hate scotch. I remember once I decided I'd read somewhere you couldn't get drunk on beer. So while it was right for beer, and I'd drink nothing but beer. I got news for you. I can get drunk on beer. That's the truth. I got that article clipped out somewhere as I glued it on my wall in my drinking days that you can't get drunk on beer. I can get drunk on beer. Well, I don't know why, but I can. They always said you can't get enough in you. I can. Man. I got news. If you really like to have a career where drinking is just there, get to be president of a college. Morning, noon, and night, just any time. And if you want to be a great host, you know, serve it yourself so that when you serve them one, you can get two in the back. You can get a marvelous reputation for hospitality. You won't let anybody else take care of it. You're going to give them the service yourself. Oh, Lord, I make it for about a year, year and a half, and then, man, it does begin to come apart at the seams. And, you know, I keep thinking nobody knows. Nobody knows. Lord, in my seat, I've heard in AA, and I think it's true. The last one who knows he's an alcoholic is the alcoholic. His wife knows it. His dog knows it. His boss knows it. His kids know it. Everybody knows it. He doesn't know it. And he doesn't think anybody else knows it. Like the lady went to the doctor, and he says, what's wrong? She says, well, it's kind of embarrassing, doctor. He says, well, I'm a doctor. What is it? She says, well, a pious gas. But she says, fortunately, it doesn't smell and it doesn't make any noise. He says, oh, well, he said, here are some pills. Take these 3 times a day for 2 weeks and come back. And she did. In 2 weeks, she's back. And he says, well, how's everything? She says, doctor, is not a bit better. In fact, it's worse. Now it stinks. He says, thank God we got your sinuses cleared out. Now we're going to work on your ears. And we alcoholics run around making a terrible noise and creating an awful stink and thinking nobody can hear and nobody can smell. You know, the green tongue syndrome. Anyhow, the day came, I got to go. The day came, and it was a horrible thing, actually. The president of the college was supposed to make a speech at 8 p.m. after dinner in the presence of the assembled faculty, the board of governors, the board of directors, the board of trustees, just name the important people, and they were there, on the state of the college. And I made that speech at 8 o'clock. The only thing is, the last thing I remember was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, taking one more drink to steady my nerves. I made that speech. And the next morning, I'm walking around that campus with my throat figuratively slit from ear to ear, and I don't even know I'm dead. I noticed a certain coolness on the campus. I did notice that. But alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful alcoholics. It dawned on me about 24 hours later that I really couldn't remember that speech. Well, that brought the hot flushes on with a bang, you know. Dear God, I knew I was in trouble by the time I remembered, but that memory didn't come right away, that I couldn't remember the speech. So I got about 6 big projects going on. I walk into the chairman of the board's office, the abbot, and I give him a song and dance, and he's looking at me. He was a marvelous man. I get all through. He says, "Sit back in the chair, Father. Here, I have something to say to you." I said, "All right." He said, "We had a meeting of the board of trustees yesterday." I said, "You did. I wasn't here." By that time, I'd got myself elected to the board of trustees. Couldn't fire me. He said, "I know you weren't here, but we had a quorum." I said, "What was on the agenda? Big, bold, brassy, nasty, mean." He looks at me with sorrow in his face and his eyes, and he says, "There was only one thing on the agenda." "What was it?" "Your resignation." I still haven't come down. When is it effective? In June? That was December. Last December, 5 years ago. He said, "No. We've prepared the document. It's effective instantly. You cannot stay here. You have disgraced yourself. You've ruined the name of the college. You've disgraced the priesthood. You cannot stay here. You've given public scandal. I will help you try to find a job anywhere in the United States, teaching, whatever you want to do. But what I wish you'd do, Mr. This, is go somewhere else and get some help with your drinking problem." He doesn't even know the word alcoholism. Ladies and gentlemen, that was my bottom. I don't know whether it's high or low. I haven't had a chance. Don't tell me about hearing the telephone when it's not ringing and answering the door when there's nobody there and watching the television when it's not turned on and seeing things come under the door and chasing them out of the room and leaning over the commode on your knees. Don't tell me not being able to stay in the bed, not being able to get up. I couldn't tell this for a long time. I really give me a chill. These people who stand up and say, "I've been in jail in every one of the states of the Union." I've only been in one. Wouldn't you think that, you know? I needed to be there. I never felt resentful about it. I never would talk about it. Even for a year after I got sober, I never admit I was in jail. But a poor suffering alcoholic one night was cursing his wife because she'd thrown him in jail. And I felt it might do him some good if he knew that I had been there in the same jail. And you know, it so shocked him that he forgot to curse his wife. That's carrying the message. I thought a little bit too far, but anyhow, I carry it. Wouldn't you think that's got me, huh? I like that. And I got news for you. I'll never have to go back again. I'll ever have to go back to jail again as long as I stay with you. Now, that may not seem like much to you. And, of course, we laugh, you know. You have to laugh to keep from crying. We get to laughing in Hellman. If we're laughing too much, Juby will say, "All right, let's not forget the vomit." places. Yeah, I've been there too. I don't believe there is such things as high bottoms and low bottom drunks. I think you keep on far enough, because I'm convinced right at that point, if I had not said yes to the second part of his question, I was no doubt about it. I was out. I was gone. There was no way I could say no. I could have said no to the second question. But I'm convinced to this day, and you'll never convince me differently, that if I had said no to the second part of that question, if I would be alive today, it would be a miracle. And if I would be alive, I would probably rather be dead. I'm convinced of that to this day. I have no idea what let me say yes to the second part of that question. I don't know whether I was so sick and tired of being sick and tired. I don't know whether I hated myself so bad, and I just couldn't stand it. And I got sent to Hazelden in Minnesota. There are no such things as AA treatment centers. You know that. There are many gold-plated south traps, and we got lots of them in the south, in the Carolinas and in Georgia, where they'll just dry you out and turn you loose to run again. But Hazelden, all they did, 8 out of 10 of the people there were recovering alcoholics themselves. And all they did was to take you through, in 3 weeks, they told me, the first 5 steps of AA. Second day I was there, they said, now, Father, we're not going to call you Father anymore. Maybe, you know, you're just nothing. You're not there, period. That young man this morning said, you know, he was nothing. Man, I identified with him. Ooh, Lord. Said, don't plan on 3 weeks for this program. I says, oh, no, I reckon I'll get it in 2. They said, oh, no, we need the other way. I said, what? They said, yes, we found out that for doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, undertakers, college professors, salesmen, takes 3 or 4 times as long. I said, why? They said, because you people keep up such a terrible facade, it takes a long time to get behind there and find out where the real Father Hillary lives. You know, I'm one of the slowest learners they ever had. They kept me on step 1 6 weeks, 3 meetings a day. Every time I went to see that man, he said, you ain't got it yet. Go do some more reading. 3 meetings a day. Lord have mercy. Well, I tell newcomers, go to meetings. Go to meetings. I mean it. I'm sure I hold the record. 9 weeks, 3 times a day. How many meetings is that? 7 times 9 is 63. 3 times that is 189 meetings in 9 weeks. I do believe I hold the record. I remember one man stood up there, and he says, about 120 of us there, every walk of life, he says, you all are the dumbest alcoholics God ever put breath into. That made me so mad. By that time, I was beginning to get convinced I was an alcoholic, but to be dumb on top of it, that was too much. He said, I'm sincere. He says, here you all are, sitting here in this treatment center, getting something that you could have gotten in any AA club room in the country, but you're too damn dumb. You have to come up here and pay for it. You know, he was right. He was absolutely correct. He was absolutely correct. I love a convention. I really do. I like them better when I don't have to talk, because I have more fun. I don't get so nervous. I don't sweat so much. But where it's really at, ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, is right back there in Coleman, Alabama, in my home group. That's where it's really at. And I believe that I can come to all the conventions in the wide world, and I'd love to, but if I ever lose that, or somebody said, I hadn't heard that before, they said, stay in that group like a banana with a bunch, or else you're going to get peeled. That was a new one for me. I hadn't heard that. Anyhow, I got the 4th step. Finally got to the 4th step. Sanctions, fearless, moral inventory. I made it. Took it to the man. He says, hell, you've made an immoral inventory. He says, you've done it again. It said, made a moral inventory. You've made an immoral one. And he was right. I had made an immoral inventory. It said, make a moral inventory. So that was another 2 weeks. I got there to that 5th man, you know, say, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our roles. Ooh, boy. We get all through, and the man says to me,
It was another priest.
Now, Father, if you believe alcoholism is a disease, when you go back to Cullman, are you going to tell people you're an alcoholic? Not what I told you. The thing I wanted the most in life was the priesthood in St. Bernard. And here they've had me 9 weeks trying to get something through this thick skull. And I said, that's the silliest question I ever heard. I said, you know I can't go back to Cullman. First of all, I'm not going to tell people I'm an alcoholic. I'm from the South. We don't run around with signs on us. Look out for me. I got tuberculosis. If you go to the hospital in the South, they ask you what you're there for. That's your business. No, I'm not going to tell anybody. And I said, furthermore, I can't go back to Alabama. To Cullman. He says, why can't you go back to Cullman? I said, you know why I can't go back to Cullman. Why can't you go back? I said, he said, well, you running around with women. I said, no. He said, did you embezzle the college's money? I said, no. He says, and why can't you go back to Cullman? I said, because I was drunk in public. Because I gave scandal, because I destroyed the good name of the college, because I destroyed the good name of the priesthood, because I destroyed... He said, Father Henry, you know, the bank president of Cullman might have lost a job over drinking, alcoholism, but 9 times out of 10, he'd have to go back to Cullman, not as bank president, but to pick up the pieces. He said, when are you going to stop running? Certainly you've got to go back to Cullman. I said, all right. I give up. I'll go back to Cullman. Now you convince the Board of Trustees to let me come back to Cullman. You know they did? I used to say that if I ever got back on the Board of Trustees, that I was going to look up the minutes when the agenda was, shall we let Father Hillary return to the college? You know, I thought that was pretty smart, see? But I got something more to tell you. I'm back on the Board of Trustees. I'm the only monk who was ever elected 3 times and forced to retire twice. And I sure ain't gonna get forced to retire 3rd time. And my sponsor tells me I've got to tell you this.
I don't want to.
You see, a year ago in August the 20th and 21st, the monks of St. Bernard elected me the 7th abbot of St. Bernard Abbey and the chancellor of St. Bernard College. That's what this ring and this chain is all about. And that, ladies and gentlemen, says something very special. I'm serious about the monks of St. Bernard. That says something very special. Well, what's it been like? My sinful heavens. For 1 year, my birthday in AA is January 14, 1968. I didn't really get to AA after all the agony I'd been through until January 14, 1969. I was dry after that year. I didn't take a drink. But that pride, that arrogance, it hadn't gone. I looked in the phone book when I got back to Cullman. There wasn't any AA listed. Wasn't in the newspapers. I said, see, there's none here. A non-alcoholic priest who loved me very much used to keep saying to me all during that time, it took me about 6 months to get back to St. Bernard and Toto. He said, aren't you supposed to be doing something? Aren't you supposed to be going to meetings or something? Isn't there something you're supposed to be doing in that AA program? I said, here, read the big book. I said, I do that. I read the 24-hour day book. I talk to anybody who wants a little 12-stepping. Yeah. I'm sure he saw something that I didn't, that it wasn't, I was at the end of my rope, that I couldn't have stayed dry, alone, much longer. And one day in January of 1969, he walks up to me with a piece of paper, and I won't give you the language he gave me, but he says, "For your information, AA is alive and well in Cullman, Alabama, and has been for 10 years. Call this number." Since I got there, it's in the phone book and it's in the newspapers too. But what makes me stupid? I am stupid. That's all there is to it. The thing that I resisted the most in AA, the thing I resisted the most, was you all. The people of AA, which are really AA. AA without you is a dead letter. A program of recovery's got to have somebody recovering in it. And I resisted that for a solid year. I couldn't accept it. And that makes me so mad. If I've got any resentments today, that's one of them. I wasted a whole year before I found out you all. And my goodness, it's been marvelous. Little bitty things, what it's been like. I told you at the beginning. I'm not going to go through all the things it's been like. The fact that AA has given me back the priesthood and given me back the monastery beyond my wildest dreams is enough for me. Oh, but there have been little bitty things. You know what? In the last 5 years, I haven't lost my teeth once. I used to lose them every time I got drunk. Wake up in the morning and feel as if they're gone again. Make me so mad I couldn't see straight. I often wonder why I didn't leave them home. I think psychologically, if I had left my teeth on the dresser, it would have said, "You're going to get drunk." And I never intended to get drunk in my life. I never intended to get drunk. I think it would have said to me, "I've had those teeth down at the bottom of the Tennessee River and dive down there in Gunnersville, pick them up in the morning." The Pullman Company, before it went out of business, had my name and address just regularly. Send those teeth back. Haven't lost them in 5 years. I haven't sat on my eyeglasses once in the past 5 years. I sit on them regularly every 2 weeks. I didn't do it on purpose either. But there they were, and I'd sit on them. After 2 years, I ran into my optometrist. He says, "Hey, Father, you got a new eye doctor?" I said, "You know better than that." Little things. Well, I'm going there. You know what it's been like? In the big book, which is dear to Christianity and Judaism alike, in the New Testament part of it, there's a story about Jesus and a Satan family that he loved very much. Two sisters and a brother down at Bethany, Martha and Mary and Lazarus. Whenever the going got real rough, you'd see in the scriptures that our blessed Lord go down and spend a little while with them, weekend. He was away, and he got worried that Lazarus was sick. And the apostles were surprised, because here he was curing everybody else. "Ain't you going to go down and see Lazarus?" "No." Lazarus dies, and he gets that worried, and then he's going down to see Martha and Mary. Martha's waiting for him. Big time rabbi, great healer, do it for everybody else. How many times we fed him? How many times we put him out? Look what we get for it. Nothing. Can't you hear the woman? Can't you hear the sarcasm, the resentment in her? "Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died." Oh, yoy. Martha nearly blew it. I bet she didn't know how close she was. But she gets there because our Lord looks at her and he says, "Thy brother will live again. Believest thou this?" And all the sarcasm, all the arrogance is out of Martha, and she says, "Yea, Lord, I do. On the last day, I believe." He wants to know where they've buried him, and he goes out there. Martha's back up, see? She's been down, but she's got to get up again. She can't stay down that long. And
says, roll the stone of the tomb away. And she says, Lord, he has been buried 4 days, and by now he stinks. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit that I stank, and that I know what Lazarus felt like when he walked out of that tomb. Thank you.